and good evening. Welcome to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. You're watching the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Data by the Department of Statistics Malaysia showed that in 2019, about 70% of SPM graduates opted to work instead of furthering their studies. Now, while this statistic is noteworthy, attention was mainly focused on headlines framing the narrative as youth preferring to be influencers and e-hailing drivers rather than pursuing higher education. So how do we reconsider this news? What do we understand about why young people are not continuing formal education? And why are they opting for temporary or freelance work? And finally, how do we think about the social and economic impact of a generation of gig workers? Let's explore these issues with our guests tonight. Joining us first is Kuluratnam Vijayakumar. He is Program Manager at Yayasan Tengku Abdurrahman, or Tengku Abdurrahman Foundation, which runs the Closing the Gap University Access Program, the Tengku Abdurrahman Scholarship, and the Future Ready Employability Program. Kula, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I was wondering what your response was when you first came across these headlines of 70% of SPM graduates opting to work instead of furthering their studies. What do you understand to be some of the possible reasons as to why young people are not continuing formal education?
I do want to say that before we go into the possible reasons why young people might not be furthering their education, I just want to note that it's a bit of an alarming headline, but I think just as Dr. Radzi Jidin said, we need a bit more context as to how these results came about, because this was a survey of people from the age of 15 to 64. It was not a survey of 2019 SPM graduates. There were only close to 400,000 SPM graduates in 2019. So this was actually a different survey. And I think before we get alarmed as to the findings, it'd be good for us as a nation to get more context on, you know, how these findings were discovered. But as for why young people are looking into other pathways compared to higher education, I think a big reason would be stagnating wages. So there was a report by Dawson last year, which shared that more than 50% of graduates, university degree graduates, were getting salaries of less than 2,000 ringgit per month. And if we compare this with existing Dawson data on salaries and wages, which is available on their website as well, that is roughly the amount that a person without a degree would earn. That's the median wage. The median wage for someone with a secondary school education was about 1,600 ringgit in 2020, according to Dawson. So that means you spend 3 to 4 years in higher education, you know, you graduate, and flip of a coin, there's a more than 50% chance that you're not going to be earning that much more than someone who did not further their education. And someone who did not further their education would have 3 to 4 years of working experience over you and would potentially be earning a higher salary by the time that you graduate. So stagnating wages is a big reason. Beyond that, there was also research by the center recently, which shared that the average graduate was looking at about between 25,000 to 50,000 ringgit of debt by the time they completed their higher education. So on top of stagnating wages, we also had young graduates having to repay their debts. And we were also seeing that up to 1 in 3 graduates were not securing jobs that were fit for their qualifications. You know, they were securing jobs that did not actually require degrees. And those are the more macroeconomic factors, I would say. But in our work at the foundation, you know, we speak to a lot of students as well. And we see that many students have to make money now. You know, they've been put in a position where they're breadwinners for their family. They have to earn, they have to contribute to the family, and they can't take 3 to 4 years away. So we're seeing that students are entering the gig economy. They are getting work that is different compared to the type of jobs that they would get in higher education. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. And that's why ultimately we need more context, and we need to see really, are people getting a living wage? Are people able to live the lives that they want to live even without a university degree? And these are the questions that need to be answered.
Well, I'm so glad that you brought up the issue of context, because again, the headlines themselves were very alarming, but I think there requires more consideration to the context of what those numbers actually represent. I'm torn by the kind of discussion that's emerged from this headline, where one part of the conversation really focuses on the fact that, young people are opting for the kind of easy way out. And this is coming from a very privileged perspective. Young people are choosing to be influencers or, freelancers or gig economy workers. And that is seen to be quick and easy money as opposed to pursuing higher education. The other part of the conversation is that, well, a lot of young people cannot afford higher education. And as you said, they need money now. When you are confronted with these two ends of the spectrum, Kula, how do you engage with people who come to the conversation already with the mindset that it's the young person's fault?
I would say that we are looking at this from the lens of perhaps 20 to 30 years ago, where getting a degree in itself was a pathway to securing a steady, stable job. And that's no longer the case. And it is easy for us to blame young people, but really, we should just be adapting to the changing nature of the workforce. In fact, if we look at the developed world, if we look at, the European Union, we can see that there is a shift towards vocational skills and technical skills and alternatives to degrees. And Malaysia is making that shift too. There are initiatives by the Ministry of Higher Education. There are also other vocational training programs and apprenticeship programs. And they are promising a living wage and a dignified, meaningful job. And I think there is some sense of elitism that only jobs that require a university degree are the jobs that we should be aiming for, but that's no longer true.
How does this impact your work, as particularly with the Closing the Gap program, which looks at university access, which looks at helping underprivileged students continue on to university? And we often think that education is the most effective catalyst for upward mobility, so upward social mobility. It is the great social leveler. Is that still the case? Do the kids that you work with still see education, so want to see tertiary education as a way out of poverty or moving out of a social economic class?
Education is definitely still a great social leveler. But at the same time, we've also seen how there are other factors related to education that have actually worsened inequality. So in the past, a degree in itself was enough to secure employment. Now, for example, we look at extracurricular involvement, we look at internships, we look at other forms of hard skills. In fact, recently, there was a lot of discussion on social media about a 17-year-old Malaysian student who was earning 14,000 ringgit as a coder, which had nothing to do with higher education. So is education still a great social leveler? Definitely it is. But I think we need to have a longer discussion about the concept of social and cultural capital. Some of these things, like, for example, how do you build a resume? How do you interview? And these are the things that we teach in the Closing the Gap program, because we realize that the technical skills that you learn in a university don't stand on their own. There is a lot of benefit from what you learn in a university environment. And at the same time, there's a lot that individuals need to be taught, both by the university system, by the school system, and by government and non-government actors.
All the things that you've said today, Kula, really resonate, and you are someone who works on the ground with with children who are thinking about going into university and may face some challenges. Do you think that policymakers are clued in to all of this? Are policymakers on the same page? What is it that you'd like to see, maybe both in the short term and long term, to help, I guess, address some of the things that we talked about? Some of the issues are systemic and wider and require a much larger conversation. But as someone who works actively in this space, what is it that you'd like to see?
I would say, in terms of policy, we always say that Malaysia has come up with some really good policies in terms of reducing inequality. It's just a question of how well those policies are implemented. So, for example, public education, public higher education degrees, they are 90% sponsored by the government with the expectation that the individual pays the remaining 10%. And for some individuals, that 10% is too much for them to bear. And they are then required to secure an education loan from PTPTN, which is also a good mechanism. But the question is, why can't we look at a more progressive policy when it comes to higher education tuition fees? Why can't we offer 100% tuition payment for students who need it and perhaps a lower percent for students who don't? Because as it stands, no matter how rich or poor you are getting a 90% discount on your course. And at the same time, there's also kind of a missing step here. We don't look at, for example, the cost of living. We don't look at the cost of transportation. For example, a personal example here, one of the students we worked with was offered a course at a polytechnic in a rural area, far away from where they lived, but they could not afford the transportation to get there. So even if they had accepted the offer, they wouldn't have been able to afford going there. And there was no mechanism in place to ensure that this person received the transport allowance to actually reach that institution. But here's the thing. If you look at certain pre-university courses, for example, matriculation, matriculation students receive 300 ringgit a month as a cost of living stipend. This is something we could easily extend to students in other courses, and it's something that we could target to students who need it. And that would be a wonderful short-term policy intervention that I would really appreciate, because students do need that just little bit of cost of living support just to make sure that, you know, that they are able to continue their education. There is a lot of effort, a lot of support. You know, the government has subsidized hostel costs, subsidized university costs. But there's just a missing step, that missing 10% that is a barrier for many students. And
yeah,
in the long... Sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry,
just getting a bit too passionate here. In the long term, I think something that we need to look at is to consider vocational courses on the same level as tertiary education. I think we are seeing the government come up with a lot of initiatives to encourage vocational courses, but I think there's still a widespread community perception that vocational courses are lower, that they are for people who can't make it in a degree, which is not the case. I think we need to value technical skills the same way that we value the theoretical skills that people learn in a degree. And once we see these two things as equal, I think we can move forward and look at creating a dignified quality of life for everybody, which includes a livable wage for everyone, regardless of their academic qualifications, because you shouldn't need to have a degree to live a meaningful and happy and dignified life.
Kula, thank you so much for your time. Kula Ratnam Vijayakumar, Program Manager at Yayasan Tunku Abdurrahman there. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more on this topic. Stay tuned. Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. We're discussing the recent revelations that, according to data by the Department of Statistics Malaysia, about 70% of SPM graduates in 2019 opted to work instead of continuing their formal education. To discuss this further, we have joining us on the show Ahmad Luqman Al-Hakim. He is coordinator for the Malaysia Jobs Coalition, which focuses on youth unemployment and underemployment. Luqman, thank you for joining me today. There's been quite a bit of hand-wringing about the news that SPM graduates are now working or prefer to work as freelancers or gig economy workers instead of continuing their formal education. I'm wondering whether this is something to be concerned about, or is it simply the changing nature of work and the labour market?
Thank you, Melissa, for inviting me. That's first and foremost the thing that I want to say. So on the when the news break about the 72% of SPM leavers, they say that they do not want to continue tertiary education and to involve in traditional jobs. The first reaction that I've been receiving, especially on social media, is at best it is caustic. There's a lot of pessimism and towards this this youth that say that they wanted to opting for another types of occupation that is not in line with our traditional thinking of what job is. And first and foremost, in when we are talking about youth and we are talking about jobs, we must remember that in the future, these youth, they are the one who shape what are the trajectory of our economy. And the fact that they have already voiced out what they wanted to do and what they wanted to be, it is a sort of telling whether it is for worse or for bad, whether it is for good or for worse. The first and foremost, the thing that I'm trying to focus here is we actually need to anticipate this kind of thing in the first place. Because like we have already been discussed on a lot of medias, we need to anticipate for a bigger shift in our working environment. And the shift that we are going is, of course, is onto like digitalization of our economy. And this is the thing that we need to like marry it together so that the shift will be, the transition will be as seamless as possible.
Okay.
We cannot put some blames.
All right, so you talked about traditional jobs and perhaps the shift to more tech-savvy or digital-centric jobs. I do want to ask you, at the heart of this conversation, is the perception that furthering studies doesn't necessarily lead to better job opportunities and better job outcomes, wages and the like. How accurate is this perception, do you think? And how do we address the issues, the real underlying issues here?
Yes, of course. For me, that is a pushing factor for why they have been voicing out what they are trying to do. First and foremost, I see this news as an indicator of a bigger systemic problem. There's a lot of studies by ISIS and by other think tanks that point out that that it is already established that Malaysia fresh graduates receive low pay, sometimes just above 1,000 ringgit per month. And we cannot analyze this news as a vacuum. Coupled with the high education cost and the time it took to complete degrees, it is a hard sell to youth when a lot of gig job market can offer much more with low barrier to entry. And that is the keyword, the barrier to entry. Hence, it makes complete sense for them not to have any trust in tertiary education, or not just tertiary, but our education system as a whole. It seems to me that our education system are ill-equipped to teach important skills to our youth, especially in the coming digitalization of our economy, where we have to rely on advanced internet skills.
Right. So you said that, a little bit earlier in our conversation, that we should be thinking about the impact. This is something that we need to consider. And I am wondering what the social and economic impact of having a generation of young people who opt to work as gig workers. And when I use the word opt, it could be either willingly or unwillingly, seemingly it's their last option to work as gig workers. What does that entail for the job market, for their welfare and security, by being gig workers? Is it necessarily a bad thing that we have an entire generation or a big part of a generation working as freelancers or working as gig economy workers?
Before we can ascertain whether it is good or bad to involve in gig workers, first we must understand, is there any pushing factors? Why gig working is so lucrative, at least for what they perceive as lucrative in the first place? Gig workers, they offers one thing that is not available to traditional jobs, like office job per se, which is the flexibility for them to do in almost anything. The reality is this. The reality is people now, they value more on the work-life balance instead of pay. And even then, the pay is no longer remunerated fairly according to the amount of labor that they put. And this is something that we must take into account. What gig working and this kind of environment have been offering to them. And for example, like Grab drivers, they managed to get at least the same pay as their counterparts, but with much more flexibility. And this flexibility does not mean that they spend little time as compared to their peers, but they can choose when they wanted to work. And that is just human nature about it. People wanted to work, whether it is youth or not. And that's why I think it is a very misunderstood thing when people are being so caustic about youth. They say that, oh, youth do not want to work. But that is entirely wrong. In any given situation, people want to work. That is just human about it.
Okay, so people want to work, but they're opting to work within the gig economy as opposed to pursuing tertiary education. Maybe there are factors limiting the option of higher education. Can I ask you then about the gig economy? I mean, it could be the future of work, but it also lacks some social, some safety nets that you get in traditional jobs, like, you know, your insurance and your coverage and all the other things that that gig economy workers may not enjoy those benefits. How then do we think about young people who enter the workforce as gig workers and who may not have the traditional benefits of traditional jobs?
Yeah, that is why when the news break about AirAsia offering like minimum 3,000 ringgit per month and a lot of employee benefits, and that is the news that I welcome. And in fact, I think that what AirAsia offered to their workers is something that should widely practice. There is a movement, like globally, these gig workers, they are demanding for complete employee benefits like their counterparts. And this is something that we must and should understand, that labor is labor, work is work, no matter whether it is gig or not. And they should be entitled to the same employee benefits like their counterparts receive. And okay. Because of that, we must anticipate these kind of things first and foremost. At least for the government to really make or even foster this kind of environment that is building for our economy.
Okay, I hear you when you say work is work, labor is labor. What I'd like to get your thoughts on what you make of comments by the Plantation and Commodities Minister, Zuraida Kamarudin. She said that the government is encouraging local youth to switch to the plantation sector because it has lower stress and better income. So she's saying it's really about changing the mentality of local youth to work in the plantation sector in non-urban areas. What do you make of that?
On the face value, yes, I think it is a very good suggestion from Zuraida, which means first, coupled with our supply insecurities, like food insecurities and cooking oils, we should, as part of our policy to not rely on foreign workers, there is something that we should welcome, which is we should encourage youth to involve in agriculture or even in plantations. However, there is a caveat. While you are encouraging people to involve in those ventures, you cannot expect them to accept the way it is. You must improve the condition. Like, there is a rise of automation that have yet to be fully tapped by our government, by our employers, especially in the agricultural sector. And there's something that must be mended, that must be by key in the first place. Because without any sort of advancement in working conditions and pays, how do you expect people to completely switch and do something that is much more laborious with little benefits? They see it.
It's very hard work to work in, particularly in oil palm plantations, and I think that has not been taken into consideration. You're absolutely right about automation. Lukman, thank you so much for joining me on the show. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, and I do want to thank you for being on the show with us tonight. That was Ahmad Lukman Al-Hakim, coordinator for the Malaysia Jobs Coalition, focusing on youth and youth unemployment and underemployment. We're going to that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for this evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.